One of the cooler giveaways at college baseball is always the trading card thing, right? On a Sunday, you get, you know, the like this last Sunday, or the game three was the sophomores. They get their trading cards. You're passing them out, and then they sit and they sign them. As somebody who has done both the team issued card and an actual Topps card or Bowman or whoever it was for you, which one, like it feels different, right? But like, is it just getting that first one, even team issued? Does that just feel like, holy cow, like this is awesome?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think my first one was at Sanford my freshman year, or my sophomore year, one of the two, but it was awesome. It's cool to just see your face on a card. And then obviously when I did cards for Topps and Bowman and Panini and all that, it was cool. It's definitely cool because people would send them in so that I would sign them and send them back. But I just decided to keep them because I signed some of them and I saw them on eBay. I would sign them a certain way and people would put them on eBay. So I just started keeping them.
Wow. That's kind of funny. Yeah. I actually have your mom tracked me down in the ballpark after you had been drafted the next year. Like she met me in a game and she gave me a signed Sonny DeShera card, which I still have.
Yeah,
you know, just like one of those, like I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. Like I covered this dude in college and now he has his own card.
This is what the best one somebody sent me. It's my out of five.
Oh, card. Wow. Oh. And you kept it?
Well, they when I retired, somebody sent me a box of like 200 PSA graded cards. It's crazy.
I guess it was like their personal collection and they're like, well, it's not useful for me anymore because he's retired.
Yes.
And so
yes. Exactly. So that was cool.
What you should do is find a way to make those into like business cards.
Right. I know.
it's like attached to the back of the slab, you attach your contact info.
Yeah.
If you want to buy a house. If any of you watch, you want to buy a house, Sonny DeShera is your guy.
Yes. Please.
Welcome into the Barn Baseball Show. Lindsey Crosby, Sonny DeShera. We're back after a week hiatus. Wasn't on purpose, just kind of worked out that way. But let's talk about Kentucky. It was the party at Plainsman, you know, the whole, obviously, like they themed it after the Masters weekend. I think everybody always tries to find a way to do something like that. But Auburn takes 2 out of 3 from Kentucky, went 12-5 on Friday, drop a close one on Saturday, 5-4, and then win run rule in 7 innings, 11-0 on Sunday. I think the big thing that I wanted to kind of start with you is Alex Petrovic's complete game on Sunday. You know, Petro, 5 hits, no walks, 8 strikeouts. He gave up 1 extra base hit. We all knew that he was good, right? But I don't necessarily know if we thought that this was coming, or is it something that like in the clubhouse, in the dugout, y'all knew that like, hey, there's another level and he's gonna get there at some point in time this year?
Yeah, I think, I mean, he'd been battling injury for so long, so nobody really knew exactly what he had. Obviously Petro knew what he had, and I had no idea what he had. I didn't, because I just knew that he was hurt the past few years, so it was hard to know. But
right,
I mean, I think he threw over 75% strikes, which is crazy.
Jeez.
And I think he threw 80 pitches, if even that, in a 7-inning game. He's just been dominant. He's been locating 4 pitches. So that's been his, that's why he's like, he doesn't have anything, like he has a really good changeup. But other than that, it's just location. He knows how to pitch.
Yeah. It's not necessarily the quality of the stuff. It's where he puts it. And the fact I think the big thing that stands out to me too, and this is not a common thing for everybody to have, but when he misses, it's a good miss. And I think by that, what I'm trying to say is, it's like, there's some people who, when they miss over the heart of the plate. And I feel like when he misses, you know, he's aiming for the black, he misses out of the zone versus missing over the heart of the plate where it can get rocked. And so even if it's not the ideal location, if they put it in the play, it's not an extra base hit.
Yeah. Yeah. His stuff's been playing well enough in zone that the guys are just off. And so it's when he gives up the hit, it's just singles. for the most part.
How do you, like, as a hitter, when you have a guy like that, that you know is just essentially, I'm not going to say untouchable. I mean, clearly he was touchable, but how do you game plan for a guy that, like, you can't really sit on anything? He can throw anything in any count. He can, for the most part, he can put it where he wants it. Is it, I got to find a mistake and jump on it? Or is it, I have to watch for, like, a certain area of the zone? Or, like, how do you prepare for something like that?
Yeah, it's hard because his stuff is unpredictable too. It's almost like you just got to pick. You got to pick a pitch for an at-bat and stay on it. Yeah. I mean, he's going to, if he just beats you, he beats you, but you just got to pick. Like, you're going to say, hey, I'm sitting on his changeup here, and he never throws you one. It's tough, but it's hard because you can't pick an area because he's going to throw it in the other area that you're not looking. He plays a good game up there.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is very, very hard, obviously, to kind of figure out him. And I think that the, when you look at the weekend, the big story to me when it comes to the loss is they figured out Jake Marciano. Like, they had a little bit of an idea of what he was going to do. 5 runs, 4 of those earned on 8 hits in 4 innings. Now, Jake still got his. This is on Saturday. 7 strikeouts, no walks. He does hit a batter. He gets his, but not the cleanest outing from a guy that we're used to seeing clean outings from. When he came in the dugout, was it frustration? Did he understand what happened? Or was it just like I wasn't my best today. They had a good game plan and they beat me.
Yeah. I think Jake would probably tell you that he just wasn't on his A game, which, Jake's just kind of like Petro, nothing overpowering, but they pitch. And I think Jake's stuff just started leaking over the middle a little bit. And it was, it's one thing if you're pitching at the knees, leaking over the middle, but I think he was leaking over the middle, pitching at the belt. And it just happens, which he figured it out. He gave up 3-2 and didn't give up any for 3 more innings, which is what all you can ask for when a guy has a tough start.
And I think that's kind of the big thing for me too, is like, hey, you slipped up a little bit. Can you kind of stabilize from there? And to your point, he did. He gives up the Tyler Bell homer, the Cerny triple that brings in 2 runs. And there was an error in there that didn't necessarily help and all of that in the first inning, if I remember right. Yeah. But then, to your point, he kind of stabilizes, he gets through it. And it really felt like, more than anything, he ended up having to come out because of pitch count. He was already like 80 pitches through 4. And you kind of got to the point where it's like, okay, you've made it through, the top of the order for the 3rd time. Right.
Yeah.
If I remember right, it was the 3rd time.
I think it was the 3rd time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause Bell batted in the 1st and 2nd. So yeah. So it's the 3rd time. It's like, hey, that's a really realistically as much as we can ask for, there's a lot of dudes you wouldn't want to leave them in there for the 3rd time in the 4th inning. And he got through it.
Like, I think Sanders had a pretty similar outing earlier in the year in Arlington against Florida State. They put up 5 on him in the 1st, and then he ended up going 5 innings. He didn't give up another run. So you just
kind of figured it out from there.
Yeah. If you can get to 5, that's pretty big. Saves the bullpen.
Yeah.
And just down the momentum.
Speaking of saving the bullpen, this is one Auburn ended up not obviously, coming back and getting the win, although, they were pushing for it. But Marcel Kulik and Garrett Brewer really kept the Tigers in this. I mean, it was 5 innings combined between the two. Kulik faced 6 batters. He gives up 2 hits. I think they were both singles, maybe.
Yeah.
But strikes out 1, and then Brewer, I mean, mostly untouchable. 2 hits and a walk, but 6 strikeouts. He does have a wild pitch. Don't necessarily know if that should have been a wild pitch on him or not. But anyway, but when you're able to do something like that, I know we've talked about this plenty in the past, right? Where this has happened in a game or anything. But being able to not have to do 4, 5, 6 guys out of the pen in one game has repercussions down the line. Even if Petro wasn't going to give you a complete game on Sunday, I feel like Auburn was in a good position just based on the fact that you used 4 guys in game 1, you used 3 guys in game 2, whereas they used 7 in game 1, and I want to say they used 6 in game 2. Is that something that, like, in the dugout, you guys are like, hey, like, we might not be winning game two, but we're setting ourselves up well for game three? Or is that a conversation after where it's like, hey, good at bats, we didn't get the win, but we're in position to win tomorrow?
It's always a conversation before. It's like, get the starter out and get their best guys in early, because if they get the best guys in early, you don't got to see them again. Which they didn't even bring their closer out. I don't know if he was hurt. I don't know what was going on, but they didn't bring their best guy out of the bullpen, which is crazy.
Yeah,
the guy on Saturday, I guess, was just rolling. They just kept, or the game two, I mean, he was just rolling, so they kept him in.
Yeah. What was it? Now Adcock ends up going mm-hmm. 3 2/3 there.
Yeah.
The two strikeouts. He does uncork two wild pitches and he hit somebody. So, like, mm-hmm. it felt like the best way to describe him was kind of like he, what am I trying to say here? It's like he was effectively wild. There you go.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, he wasn't always consistently in the zone, but it was just enough where you couldn't really sit on it and things like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, yeah.
I do want to get to the offense real quick, because I feel like this was what I really liked about the weekend is, you know, scored 27 runs, only two homers. Now, those were big homers, right? I mean, it's Logan Gregorio, Bub Terrell both have homers. But 27 runs with only two homers. I know we've talked before about, like, the guys who can hit for power on this team and how they haven't always been doing that as of yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like this weekend was kind of the example of, hey, when offensively we're on, and in two of the three games we were, you don't need the home runs when you're passing the baton, when you're getting balls in play and you're making them defend them. I feel like I feel like I'm not going to say you don't need the power, but I think this weekend almost at times felt like this was the best version of the Auburn offense we've seen in games one and three.
Yeah. I think I came in the locker room after game three and looked at somebody and said, that was our most complete game yet. Just, you know, took our walks, hit extra base hits. I mean, obviously our pitching's been great. So I guess most complete offensive game we've played.
Yeah, I'm trying to go back, and I was trying to look in, I think it was game one, every single run scored on either, if it scored on a batted ball, I think there was like one sac fly, but everything else, if it scored on a batted ball, it was a single. Like there was a run, McCrane scored on a wild pitch.
Yeah.
Terrell scored on a sac fly, but I think everything else was...
And that's big. We haven't had that. Yeah, we haven't had that. The single to drive him in, you know, runner on second and third less than two type of thing. We haven't had the big homer. We had two big homers with Bub and Greg's grand slam. So it's good. That's what we really need to see, that, because we haven't had that come along in a minute.
Yeah. Game three was very, very much kind of felt like it was, one, the Chris Rimmer show, but then two, it was – get guys on, and if he doesn't bring them in, we're just going to pop one over the fence. But game one, yeah, just fantastic all around. Do guys ever talk about, like, talk to you or talk to Gabe and stuff in the dugout and be like, hey, I just got to put the ball in play and, like discuss, like, I'm going to try to simplify this at bat and I'm just going to try to shoot it the other way? Or is it just one of those, you know, they go up there and they're adjusting? Like, have they decided ahead of time that I'm going to try to do this? Or is it just a, when they get up there and they get into the at bat, that's what they end up doing?
It's just based on the situation. It's whatever the game's asking, you know, it's, you know, you're it's going to be different with runners in scoring position and not, you know, with how many outs there are. It's a at bat by at bat type of thing.
That's kind of what I figured, is it's like, it's not, nothing's predetermined when they go up. And I think there's
sometimes been some people.
Yeah. I think there's been a lot of people who, when they see this offense struggling, I feel like some of the text messages I get or the DMs or whatever, it's like he went up there looking to hit a home run. And I'm like, I don't think they go up there like deciding I'm going to do this or that. It's just kind of a, how does the at-bat evolve? But
yes,
I do feel like, especially on game one, that there was a renewed focus on, hey, when we get to two strikes, we're gonna do this. We're going to do this. And at times, the team's been really good at that different approach on two strikes, and at times, I feel like it struggled.
Yeah.
Was there anything said this week about, like, hey, we have to make sure that we're executing in these high leverage situations, mm-hmm. or just like a, hey, you know, we righted the ship against Arkansas. We want to keep doing what needs to be done. And so we know to do this. Like, was this intentional ahead, like the conversation with the coaching staff, or was this just situational baseball and everybody doing their job?
It gave so great in the dugout, because obviously when I played here, he was at third base, so I didn't have his all of his talking and everything that he does. But he talks to him and talks through the game with him. And each guy, he kind of says like, hey, you know, if you want to have a plan, this is what I think you should think, and what this guy does, what his tendencies are, and all that, and this, and you know, he's like, he's not telling a guy you have to do this. It's kind of like, hey, you know, if you want to, here it is. Because I know something like myself, I would not want to be like kind of told his tendency. And I'd rather just go up there blind and see my plan through. But some guys do like having a plan told to them, and they're like trying to execute that plan, which is that's what makes a good hitting coach, is like the options. You know, you can't just be one type of cookie cutter. It's options, and he's always been so great at options.
Well, can we acknowledge that not everybody is an all SEC, you know, caliber, all American draft pick kind of guy up there?
Yes.
You know, some of us need the extra help when we're trying to figure out what to do. It's not natural for everybody like it was for you. Yeah. In just a minute, I do want to talk about this week. We got Griffin Graves on the mound, so his first start of the year. And kind of as we're wrapping up, you know, getting to the back half of the schedule, we'll do all of that next right here on the Barn Baseball Show. Lindsey Crosby started to share it here on the Barn Baseball Show. Brad Law is back later this week for the preview of the weekend. You know, going to Florida, that's going to be a fun one. Two top 10 teams, including a Saturday game at 11 a.m. I know that obviously everybody's used to some of the early games from like youth baseball and things like that, but it still has to feel a little bit weird to play a game at 11 o'clock in the morning on a weekend. I understand like there's spring games and things like that, and that's part of the reason for this. That's got to feel weird though. Well, right?
Is that why we're playing 11?
I'm assuming so. Our A day is that day. I'm assuming Florida spring game is that day. If Florida's just choosing to do an 11 a.m. game because they can do it, that's really kind of dumb.
I mean,
I'm gonna go look real quick. But like, how's that feel for you guys?
That's sickening. I hate that
11 o'clock day, especially college. College, you know, you have a whole process of a day. You know, in the minor leagues and major leagues, you can have when you have that 11 a.m. game or 12 a.m. game or 12 p.m. game. It's just, all right, get to the field, do what you need to do, and get ready for the game. In college, I feel like these guys need more of a – not that they need to get told what to do, but they just they just show up expecting to do some things that they might miss out on. In an 11 o'clock game, you're going to miss out on some things.
Hey, fun news. Like, they already had their spring game. This isn't an adjustment for their spring game. This is just because they want to play at 11 o'clock in the morning. It's noon for them, but still.
So it's 12 o'clock.
Yeah. It's 12 Eastern, 11 Central. But
still.
Body clock wise, it's 11 o'clock. Yeah.
Why can't it be one? Like,
two. That's
I mean, it's a 6-hour drive for us, no matter which way you cut it. So playing an extra hour early that's not going to hurt us. I mean, sorry, an extra hour later.
Yeah. Part of me wonders is it a travel consideration? Is that why they're doing the game so early? But like going and looking at a lot of their weekend games, some of the Sunday games have been like that, but
it's hard to say it's a travel consideration when we don't even play on Sunday.
That's a good point.
We've got nothing to do on Sunday. I would love to know their reason. Maybe next week, maybe I'll ask some people this week and next week I'll have an answer. That's why we play at 12 o'clock. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. Just kind of like,
I mean, it could be something for our A day. What time is our A day at?
Our A day is in the afternoon. Yeah. So like
it could be
something. Although I don't think our A day is being broadcast on like ESPN. I believe it's going to be carried on like War Eagle Plus, but maybe it's a consideration they made for us. Who knows?
Yeah.
Back and look when they went to Arkansas, the Saturday game was a 2 p.m. game.
And they probably chartered their flight for that.
But yeah, I was about to say, but that's a flight. Exactly. I don't necessarily know. When they went to Athens, the Saturday game was noon, but that was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series. I don't really know
how far is Athens from Gainesville.
They usually meet
the same as ours, I bet. Oh yeah, they play.
Well, they play the football shrimp. For football, they meet in the middle. This one was actually in Athens now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this was in Athens. They have played in Jacksonville before.
I thought they do that midweek. They usually do that midweek in between.
They do a midweek like that. That's right. The actual SEC series is in Athens. And for those who don't know, we're referencing for Jacksonville, we're referencing the AAA affiliate of the Miami Marlins, the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. It's a common tournament destination early in the season.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they host things like that. Just like we've played in Montgomery Stadium, we've played in your old haunt of the Trash Pandas, things like that. 7 p.m. on Thursday, 5:30. This is all Eastern times now. 5:30 on Friday. So an earlier game. Maybe it's a TV consideration. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And then Saturday at 12. I hope that's a TV consideration. Not quite sure what that's about. When they host Texas A&M the next weekend, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's 6:30 on Friday, 5 on Saturday, 1 p.m. on Sunday. So weird scheduling. I don't know what Florida's doing here. Anyway, whatever. Before we get to there, though, there is something where Griffin Graves is back on the mound as a starter. We saw him get 2/3 of an inning last week. One hit, 3 runs allowed. He walked 2, no strikeouts. You know, just getting back on the horse. I don't think any of us really had any huge expectations for him. But he is the starter tonight. And I feel like what kind of expectations does the dugout, do the guys have for us in a situation like this where it's his first career start? He's missed almost, you know, most of the season so far.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows that he's super talented. I mean, there was talk coming into, you know, coming out of fall that he was the best pitcher on campus. But like, what expectations do you guys realistically have for what he can do given how much time he's missed and coming back from injury and everything?
Yeah. I mean, he was groomed to be a starter the whole fall, you know, and the spring, right? Then he got hurt like what, a week before the season.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I think it's just maybe a couple innings tonight just for him to get back out there to be ready for this weekend. Cause I think he's, you know, we've got 4 legit starters now.
Yeah.
So Jackson Sanders can't even he can't even start because he's so good out of the bullpen. And we didn't even need him this weekend. I think Sanders got up this weekend like the 5th inning. But Petro was at like 60 pitches. And so it's like, do we need him really right now?
And then it was a run rule win. And you didn't. Auburn only used 8 pitchers like all weekend, 8 guys total, which is just crazy to think about in college baseball.
You know, LSU did that all year last year. They used like 6 to 8 pitchers every weekend. And they won the national championship. So it can work.
Can't complain too much about it, right?
That's right.
So I'm really curious to see. I think one, to kind of answer my own question, I guess. I'm curious to see what his stuff looks like with the you know, with the full week off from pitching last week. And now that he's kind of gotten some of those jitters out. And to kind of to your point, not only how deep can he go, but how, I don't think they're going to push him, but I'm curious to see, does he look the same in the third inning as he did in the first? Does he look, you know, what does he look like going forward? Because I do think being able to have him for a weekend or even when you get to Hoover, right, and you're doing the SEC tournament with how that scheduling works and how compressed it can be, I think that's where Auburn has a chance to shine because we have so many starters. And a lot of other teams are sometimes scrambling to figure out game 3. We could cover, realistically, we could cover games 4 and 5 in a series with the guys that we have that we trust. So,
like, I'd be scared to play us in a regional, seriously, because of we have 4 and Griffin could be a 5th legit starter, you know, like, but if we only play like in a super, I'd really be scared if we got to a super because we say we roll out there with, you know, Dre, Marciano, and Petch, and you got Sanders and Griffin piggybacking one of those guys. It's a good problem.
Yeah. And being able to contrast one guy with another where it's like, hey, here's Marciano. It's a softer tossing lefty that's locating well. And then you can throw in a different visual look behind him. And it's like, how do you in essence have to have scouting reports on 2 starters and you have to deal with 2 starters in one game. And that's, that's a unique thing that we can do that not a lot of other teams can do.
Yeah, it's not like you just see, oh, Sanders is getting hot in the pen. You know, we'll see him for an inning or two. It's like, no, you probably see him for the rest of the game.
Yeah, you might see him two or three times.
Yeah, yeah.
Good luck figuring out what to do there. Yes. Yeah, so I think the last kind of thing I wanted to get to is your, as an accomplished first baseman, both offensively and defensively, I don't think people realize how good you were as a defender at first base. You weren't just hitting bombs. You were also picking, scooping, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. What's been your opinion or your thoughts on Eddie Madrigal over there at first base? Now that he's back off of injury and he's getting multiple starts at first base, what's been your mm-hmm. thoughts on how he's looked over there and kind of what he brings differently to first than some of the fill-in options we've used? Not that they were bad, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Having Chase over there, having Gregorio over there, what is Madrigal bringing to the position that's a little bit different?
I mean, Eddie probably has the most games at play at first under his belt of anybody on this team, I would have to say, in college. And so he knows the game. He's a great player, and he's still, you know, that he's like 8 months out from ACL, not even 8 months out from his ACL surgery. So he's still doing some things that I know he's working on and just trying to get to feel normal again. Mm-hmm. But other than that, he's just, his knowledge is great. He's a great, like, it's hard to compare him to Bingaman because Bingaman's a middle infielder who was playing first base. So he's going to have the upper hand on the defense, the defensive part. And so Eddie's good. He's great. He knows the game very well.
And I think the thing that stands out to me, and maybe it's just like, it's just minor and stuff, but it feels like Eddie's just a little bit better at holding these guys on and keeping them a little bit closer to the bag in stolen base situations or potential stolen base situations. And I think that comes to the veteran aspect of having done mm-hmm. this so much versus a guy like Gregorio, who is used to not as used to holding guys, especially at first.
Yeah.
And I do think that does have positive repercussions down the line as far as run prevention, keeping double plays in place. And mm-hmm. I don't have any stats on this, but it just feels like we've been a little cleaner on the running game when Madrigal's in there.
Yeah, his footwork and his thought process, it's there. But, you know, he's got the experience. He knows.
Yeah.
He was taught before he came here how to play first base, and he knows.
Yeah, so having him, and you know, we're still it's a good problem to have. We're kind of still in that situation now where we have more guys than we have spots to play. Mm-hmm. But this is, I feel like this is the first weekend we've had in a while where it was the same 9 starters in all 3 games.
Yeah,
like usually we're having to go and we're having to make changes and we're swapping in, you know, Steele behind the plate or something. And this was the first time when it was just the same 9 guys all 3 games. Mm-hmm. Is that, like, there's good and there's bad, obviously, but how are some of the guys who are not rotating in, how are they responding to, hey, we're in crunch time now, I'm getting a little bit less playing time? How is that going over in the clubhouse?
You know, the good thing is most of them are just happy that we're winning and just, you know, most of them are on their last leg anyways, the senior year. So it's like I think they're choosing to be excited over Pout, which is great. You know, it's college. It's hard. It's not like the minor league season where there's a set lineup that goes out. You know, there's the 6 lineups that go out to the affiliates, and that's who has to play that week. You know, it's not something that you can work towards because you did all your work in the fall and the spring before the season. So it's tough. I hate it for the guys that don't get to play, but they have good attitudes.
Yeah. They understand kind of the reasoning behind this and why this is being mm-hmm. done. And I think rotations naturally kind of narrow as you get later in the year. We see it in basketball too, right? Yeah, Bruce would always start off with 10, 11 guys in the rotation. And mm-hmm. as you get down into, you know, to crunch time, it's getting down to, you know, 8 and 9 and things like mm-hmm. that. I think guys understand. And correct me if I'm wrong, but just getting some of those guys that playing time early in the year probably helps them with the confidence and the coaching staff with the confidence in them if you need them to step in later versus hoping a guy can do it because he hasn't played all year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the good thing. We've seen everybody. So if we need somebody to step in, we know we're going to get it for the most part.
Yep. All right, that'll do it for the Barn Baseball Show. Reminder, that is...
No.
Oh, gosh, got you there. Yeah, you know, but Auburn plays 6 p.m. tonight. It is against Alabama State. They are 18-16. That's going to be on SEC Network Plus. You can also catch the radio call, Auburn Sports Network, Wings 94.3. We will be back later in the week on Thursday to preview Florida and their weird scheduling stuff. Maybe Brad will have some insight there. He'll be coming to us provided hotel Wi-Fi cooperates on Thursday. And maybe he can give some updates onto why he thinks the scheduling's so weird. But for Sonny DeShera, I'm Brad Law.
It just rolls off the tongue.
Single time. For Sonny DeShera, I'm Lindsey Crosby. This has been the Barn Baseball Show.